It's not just I've memorized these steps and I know what to do. It's I've learned what I need to see and why it's important. So now I can take that and apply it to this case in particular in front of me. And that, I think, really shows that somebody actually knows what they're doing. They've learned how to apply the steps that are needed for grossing to that case in particular, rather than just memorizing some steps that someone told them to do.
Welcome to the People of Pathology podcast. I'm Dennis Strang. On this podcast, we explore pathology, laboratory medicine, forensic science, and how technology can make us more efficient. There are two main ways of teaching concepts in specimen grossing. You can teach how to do each step, or you can teach why you do these steps. Pathologist assistant Marissa Spencer is back on the show today. We delve into the importance of teaching why versus teaching how in pathology training. All right, let's dive right in with Marissa Spencer. So the last time we talked was episode 154. If anybody wants to go back and listen to that one, that time you mentioned the concept of teaching why versus teaching how. And we only talked about that briefly the last time, but I want to get into it a little bit deeper this time. So first, let's start with this concept and can we kind of explain what it is?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think in general, when people are not necessarily trained in teaching, but they're trying to demonstrate or teach someone a skill, it's very common to kind of start listing these steps and just telling somebody what to do and kind of giving them a checklist, if you will. But what this does often is rather than promoting learning and understanding of what you're doing, it can actually promote memorization instead. And when you're teaching like that, it's not necessarily a bad thing, right? If you have something that is consistently the same, you have to do it the same way every single time. But when you have something as complex as what we do in pathology, it really isn't the best approach because every specimen is different. Every case is different. So if you're just promoting kind of memorization of a list of steps and not understanding why you're doing what you're doing, then that's how things can really fall through the cracks and be missed. You know, if you don't understand why you're taking a certain measurement or why you're sectioning something in a specific way, then unfortunately, sometimes things get missed at the bench or can be compromised at the bench because you didn't really understand what exactly it was that you were doing. And I think, you know, when we think about the role of PAs in regards to training and teaching, the AAPA salary survey that was last released demonstrated that 62% of PAs who responded are responsible for teaching, whether that be of residents or PA students, or even maybe, you know, newer colleagues who are new to the scope of practice. And it's really important, I think, that if there's that many of us teaching, that we come from a place of demonstrating, you know, why are we doing the things that we're doing? Why does this measurement matter? Why does this section matter? Rather than just saying, okay, first we do this, then we do this, et cetera, et cetera.
Just to play kind of devil's advocate a little bit, I feel like just teaching someone the steps initially would be faster. Like if someone comes to you with questions and you just do, okay, just do this and this and this and this, and then you can kind of sort of move on.
I think 100% correct. You are so right. I mean, I think that's the argument because the reality is, You know, PAs, we have so many roles, right? We wear so many hats. If you're teaching, that's not your main role necessarily. You're typically grossing or maybe doing frozens or triaging or, you know, a variety of other things. And then on top of that, you have to teach. And I fully recognize that explaining why something needs to be done takes significantly more time than just giving somebody those steps. But If I just blindly say, go do this, this, and this, in that moment, whoever I'm teaching, whether it be a resident or a PA student, sure, they are going to do those steps right then and there. But the likelihood that they're going to actually remember that or understand why they're doing it necessarily without some contextual information is very low. And the next time they're doing that case or case like that again, they might come back with the same or similar questions because that concept wasn't really understood. if I take the time initially up front to explain, this is why we're doing what we're doing, it's much more meaningful and impactful on the learner. They're going to walk away understanding a little bit better. And then the next time they have a case that's similar, it's going to be easier for them to approach that case because they're going to know what they're looking for. The reality is every specimen is different. So yes, in general, there are, you know, a guideline of steps of things that we do in pathology when we're handling surgical specimens, right? But we can't just blindly serially section every specimen in the same plane because tumors are in different locations or the relationships are different. And if you don't understand the value of demonstrating a certain relationship or a certain measurement, if you just blindly cut thinking, oh, these are the steps I take, you could potentially compromise the case or miss something. So actually understanding it from the beginning, yes, it takes more time to explain and do that up front, but in the long run, that pays off. It's so much more beneficial because that learner will become significantly more confident and independent as time goes on. So, you know, in the long run, it's going to make for a more efficient team.
Okay, I love that. That's a great point. Even though, like you said, it might be faster at the beginning, in the long run, you're going to be spending more time and the learner will be learning less, I guess, is kind of the point, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel like I know you've been teaching for some time too. In the last 10 years that I've been teaching residents and students, I feel like I didn't always teach this way. You know, I definitely at one point, especially in the beginning, was more of a step-by-step person because that was faster and I'm in the middle of things. But what I started to notice was that those learners would come back and be like, hey, Marissa, I think I'm supposed to do this again. Is that right? And they lacked the confidence in what they were doing because they didn't really know why they were doing it necessarily. So even if they had the step right, if they didn't see the value of it, it just didn't really click for them. So what I started to realize was if I explained to them, you know, a good example might be like in head and neck cases, you always want to make sure that your mucosal margins are perpendicular because your pathologist needs to be able to assess how close dysplasia goes to that margin. That's a really important prognostic factor. And also from a staging perspective, the depth of invasion is critical in those cases. So you want to make sure you're sectioning in such a way that those lesions that are coming from the mucosa and extending into the underlying tissue can be best appreciated. And if you don't really understand that, you might think, oh, I just need to section this perpendicular to the long axis and that's it, which, I mean, most of the time that is correct, but sometimes you need to make adjustments because you need to be able to demonstrate those margins or that depth of invasion the appropriate way. And if you don't understand that, the concept of those two things being really important for those cases, it's easy to kind of just blindly cut something. And, you know, maybe you got it right or maybe you didn't, but, you know, understanding why you're doing what you're doing will just help you have a better relationship with your pathologist and better quality sections for them to appreciate at the scope to get a diagnosis appropriately.
Okay, that makes sense. And this brings up, even before you start grossing a specimen, you've got to understand some of the other concepts that you mentioned, like why do you section a certain way? And especially, what are margin? And like you said, when would you use perpendicular versus en face? Those are important concepts too.
Yeah, absolutely. And why they matter. Why is it relevant to show this versus that? You know, because it, unfortunately, I mean, most things when we're grossing, if a mistake is made, you know, you can often fix that mistake. But there are some things that once you cut, that's it. So if you don't initially understand why you're doing what you're doing, and you just kind of make an assumption based on these list of steps that you have memorized, it's really easy for you to kind of get lost in something. And I noticed, you know, I'm not someone who likes to hover over a resident or a student, not only because I think that that's not a really good learning environment. It doesn't cause like a nurturing environment for people to feel comfortable to learn. But also, that's just not a realistic expectation for a PA because you're doing so many other things at the same time that you're teaching. So typically, you know, you kind of check in with somebody in a stepwise fashion. So if somebody, you know, is uncomfortable asking a question or they think they know what they're doing, but they maybe misunderstood and then they section through something, sometimes you might come back and say, oh, okay, let's pause for a moment and reassess and kind of go over what's going on so far, because people might make mistakes or things like that. And again, a lot of times you can fix them, but sometimes you can't. So it's better to really understand why you're doing what you're doing up front. And then you can honestly learn how to do anything if you understand the why behind it. And I think a big part of that, honestly, involves understanding staging when it comes to grossing.
Yes.
That's, you know, a huge, huge part of it. As a PA, you know, all programs have requirements, and, you know, NACLS accredited programs have requirements. And one of them is that they have to learn about staging. But how in-depth programs go, I think, varies from program to program. And I think if you don't really understand the staging of the specimen, sometimes you can struggle to understand why you're doing what you're doing. But if you know what's needed for your pathologist to sign out that case, then you can really approach any specimen, even if it's something you've never grossed before. If you know what the staging is for that type of tumor, then it makes knowing how to approach the case so much easier, because you know what you're looking for and what you need to submit.
Yes, that's something I've heard in a few different places recently, and I try to do myself when I'm working with residents, is look at the staging first and understand what information you need. And I've been trying to stress, like, look at most of the staging information. A lot of it comes from the gross, not the sections or the gross description especially.
Absolutely. And I mean, staging is widely based on location of lesion as well as the size of the lesion, right? I mean, there's a lot of things, but just kind of, you know, for being very vague. And you don't realize what relationships are important, if you just kind of blindly section through a specimen, you could lose a relationship that you actually really needed to demonstrate. So it's one thing to be like, oh, I know I need to measure this and get sections of it. But it's another thing to say, okay, this lesion in the kidney, for example, understanding relationships of lesion to Drotus fascia or to the renal sinus fat, that's really important. And if you don't recognize that those are valuable and important for staging, if you just kind of section through your specimen, you might lose the ability to demonstrate how close that lesion is to that structure, and therefore make it more difficult for your pathologist to really appreciate what's happening in the specimen and get an accurate stage of the tumor.
Okay, I understand. How do you go about teaching staging? I mean, do you do it on a sort of a case-by-case basis, or is this kind of like, you know, at the beginning, kind of, this is the sort of the overarching concept, and then show how you apply it to particular specimens?
So what I like to do when I have, and when I'm in the gross room and I'm teaching a student or a resident, is I like for them to kind of come prepared, because I think it's important to not, you know, have someone come in completely blind. It's important to, you know, do some sort of assessment. So I actually recommend often that they pull up the CAP checklist or the AAPA grossing guidelines, which are very, very beneficial at demonstrating what is needed for staging purposes. And I ask the student or resident to look through that. And then we go over the anatomy of the specimen and kind of talk about the anatomy in relationship to the staging protocol for that specimen type. So I typically will do it on like a case by case basis, because every specimen is different, right? Every tumor and organ has a different staging protocol. So I don't want them to memorize the staging necessarily, but I want them to be able to appreciate for each case that they're working on in that moment, you know, what's happening, what do they need to see. So I'll have them look at the staging. We talk about the anatomy of the specimen and relationship to that. And then before we even start sectioning, discuss, well, how would you best be able to show what you need to for staging? And then section based on that thought. And we talk about how sometimes you have to adjust your approach in the middle of grossing a case too, if you start sectioning and see the tumor is traveling in a different way than maybe you anticipated. You know, sometimes you have to adjust what you're doing in the midst of sectioning. It's not just always perpendicular to the long axis or something like that. So that's typically how I approach a case broadly.
Okay, I see. And I feel like there's several advantages to this, but one of the main ones is once you know what information is needed for staging, you're not going to miss any of that. which is, I think, is huge.
Oh, 100%. Right. I mean, it helps you become very efficient and proficient at what you're doing. It helps ensure that you don't have to, you know, return to a case, that you're not missing anything. It also helps build, I think, really strong trust between the PA or resident or student and the pathologist signing out the case. Because the reality is, nine times out of 10, your pathologist is not seeing the tissue, right? They're only going to get your report and the slides that are generated from that case and any photos you submit. So there really needs to be good trust between whoever is grossing that case and whoever is signing out that case. And if you can appreciate what's needed for them to appropriately sign out that case, it makes grossing it so much easier. And also, like I said, if you understand the staging, you can gross any specimen, I feel, pretty confidently if you are trained appropriately, because you know what you're looking for. So even if you've never grossed something in your life, you can have a general idea as to how to approach that specimen. So if a resident or a student of mine have never grossed something, if they understand the staging, they might say, okay, hey, Marissa, this is my game plan. This is what I think I need to do. And a lot of times they're right. Sometimes we have to make adjustments and there's other ways to approach things, but a lot of times it clicks and you can see the confidence in them build. And that, to me, you know, really shows learning. They're taking concepts and actually applying them. It's not just I've memorized these steps and I know what to do. It's I've learned what I need to see and why it's important. So now I can take that and apply it to this case in particular in front of me. And that, I think, really shows that somebody actually knows what they're doing. They've learned how to apply the steps that are needed for grossing to that case in particular, rather than just memorizing some steps that someone told them to do.
Yeah, I like that a lot. The idea of having, I think you called it a game plan. And I tell that to some of the residents, like for certain things where I work, they're required to call the attending, even after talking with the PA. But I tell them, like, don't call the attending and just say, like, okay, I don't know, what do I do? I'm like, tell them, okay, this is what I have. This is what I'm thinking about doing. What do you think? How does that sound?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, that demonstrates that you understand what's in front of you and what you need to show and why. And if you're having a conversation, your pathologist is going to entrust in you a lot more because they recognize that you understand the specimen. You know what you need to see to show them at the scope. And it just is a better way to collaborate and provide optimal patient care, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. Some of the things you've been saying, and you're talking about, even if it's a specimen you've never seen before, you would have an idea of how to handle it. And this brings up the concept of, well, I guess it's sort of broader. Like, a lot of these concepts are transferable. Like, you can use them once you understand margins and once you understand staging for one thing, you can transfer that to other things, even if you've never seen it before. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I like the joke that grossing is so complex and yet at the same time so simple, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, in general, when we talk about these steps, there are a lot of things that overlie, right? Measuring, you know, inking certain things, appreciating what a margin is in comparison to just like an external surface. Yes, there is definitely a lot of transferable ideas here. And if you understand why you're doing what you're doing, then in conjunction with the anatomy of the specimen, you really do have a lot of resources and tools readily available to you to approach a case. You know, half the battle is being able to orient the specimen and identify what you have, and the other half is getting the information that's important for the pathologist, right? So when we're grossing, we're not just diagnosing tissue or, you know, tumors, we're also assessing the surgery, right? You know, was it complete? How far are the margins? Did they get everything needed? We're looking at the stage, you know, histologically, they're going to be assessing the grade of the tumor. So there's a lot of things that go into that assessment, both grossly and histologically. And if you can appreciate that, then even if you've never seen something, yeah, you can. I think you have the tools to be able to approach it. That doesn't mean you should just have blind confidence and, you know, blindly do something the first time without discussing with somebody necessarily. But I think that when you're learning, if you have that mindset, it makes you a lot more confident and comfortable, and it makes you, I guess, work better with the team as you're learning. Because it is hard. It is hard, I think, to be a resident or a PA student, because these concepts, learning them in a textbook or a classroom setting, is not the same as having the hands-on experience. And for residents, I mean, we know that they come in really completely blind. They do not have any sort of gross, you know, pro-section discussion during their residency. So this is an intimidating place for them to be, the gross room. It's not something they're super comfortable or familiar with. And I think a big part of that comfortability building is building confidence. And this is a great way to do that.
Yeah, I agree. But it sounds like it's a lot of work at the beginning, but it pays off in kind of in the long run, as you said earlier.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that it does take more work to do this up front, but it does pay off in the long run, because, I mean, at this point, I have seen through, you know, someone's 4 years of residency. So when someone comes in fresh, going in, you know, all the way to graduation, and you can see that growth that's made when you have these conversations. The greatest challenge I feel, or like hardship I feel I've seen, is when a fourth year resident still isn't comfortable in the gross room. That breaks my heart for a variety of reasons. One, I feel like, you know, we as a team have failed them in building a successful foundation for them to appreciate the gross pathology and anatomy in some ways. And if I see that, I'm like, well, what could we have done differently to improve that experience for them? Why are they still struggling to master these concepts or have the confidence that they should at this point? And a lot of times it's because they still don't understand necessarily what it is that they're looking for or why they're looking for it. So I think if you just upfront start with that, yes, it does take more time, but then by the time they are, you know, in their third and fourth years of residency, they really do have it solidified. It's knowledge that they have. They have done the learning. It's not just something that's been passive for them that they in the moment understand in the gross room and then they leave, and it kind of leaves their brain when they go on another rotation. It actually is solidified in their brain. So when they come back from, you know, their CP rotations or other AP rotations and they're in the gross room again, they do remember significantly more and they have more confidence. And that to me is I think really a challenge, and it's really rewarding when you do see that. You want to see the growth in their confidence and in their skill set, and it helps mm-hmm. build both of those things to teach in this way.
That makes sense. I can just kind of thinking about my own experience. I don't work with PA students yet, but I do work with residents, and I can relate to what you're saying, seeing either the growing confidence and, you know, them remembering after being in a different rotation, or the opposite, that not happening and trying to figure out, okay, how do we do this better the next time?
Yeah, absolutely. Because you want the knowledge to stick. It's important.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think, you know, so many pathologists, they don't gross, right? Because they have PAs. So I think that sometimes mm-hmm. when it comes to learning, it might seem like, well, you know, from a resident perspective, I can appreciate them saying, well, I'm never going to gross. So, you know, it doesn't, why do I need to learn this? But the reality is, if you don't understand it at the bench, you're not going to understand it at the scope. You know, if you have somebody who is struggling at the gross, if I don't submit a certain section, the pathologist is never going to see it. So you have to really know what you're doing at the gross bench. And even if you aren't grossing, if you're an attending and your PA or a resident has a question, the person they're going to ask is you. So if you don't feel confident or understand their question or understand the specimen, that's not good either. So even if you're not going to be grossing as an attending, it's still really, really important that you understand how grossing is done and why it's done the way that it is. So reminding residents and students of that, I think, is really important, because it makes them want to be in that room more and understand the specimens more. And it'll make them, you know, appreciate things at the scope even more. And if they're confident in the sections that they took, it'll make signing up the case so much easier because they'll have great quality sections that they can really easily appreciate and read, and a strong roast in junction with that, and maybe some specimen photographs in junction with that. It just will make them a more efficient and proficient pathologist.
Okay. Yeah, I love that. Totally agree. This is the People of Pathology podcast with our guest, Marissa Spencer. We'll be right back. LabVine is an interactive online learning platform where laboratory professionals learn, develop, and discover by sharing knowledge and building on each other's experience. The platform provides global access to internationally accredited laboratory-specific courses and other resources developed by lab specialists, like us, for the laboratory industry. LabVine is free to sign up, and you can use the link in the show notes to get started. If you think it would be nice to have a helpful reference about digital pathology, I have some great news for you. Dr. Alexander Zhurdov has written a book called Digital Pathology 101, All You Need to Know to Start and Continue Your Digital Pathology Journey. This book will help you, whether you're a complete novice or a digital pathology trailblazer. You can get a copy of it by following the link in the show notes. Now for the rest of my conversation with Marissa Spencer on the People of Pathology podcast. Hey, you just mentioned photographs. So what about like photos and diagrams? How do they kind of fit into this whole picture?
Oh my goodness. Well, I think specimen photography is a hugely valuable resource that is often underutilized. I think people feel that, you know, pictures aren't always necessary. And I mean, let's be real. Devil's advocate. A photo without context can be entirely meaningless, right? I mean, that's why we write really important gross dictations, because pictures alone are not going to explain what's happening in a specimen. But if you have a great gross dictation that's supplemented with mapping diagrams or specimen photography, that really is what's going to lead to the most optimal patient care. I really think that it's an invaluable benefit to have photos, not just for the pathologist who's signing out the case, but for the clinicians and surgeons that are also treating this patient, for residents and students for learning purposes. I mean, there's just so many reasons that pictures are important and so many situations and when we should be utilizing them. A lot of times people, I think, forget that, or they think, okay, I don't need a picture of this because the pathologist is going to see it under the scope. But the reality is there are actually a lot of things that we assess grossly that can't be appreciated microscopically, or that the gross assessment is actually even more important for staging than the histologic assessment. So specimen photographs really kind of help aid you in showing what you saw to get the most accurate diagnosis or stage or assessment of a specimen.
Okay. I think that makes sense. So what about then, you mentioned like mapping diagrams. What do you mean by that?
So when I'm talking about a mapping diagram, essentially I'm referring to taking a photo of a specimen that you are sectioning and then drawing on that photo a map of the sections you submitted for histologic assessment. So essentially, you know, you take a macroscopic visual of the specimen and draw on it to demonstrate a variety of things. You know, it can demonstrate the orientation of a specimen, the gross pathology, the sections that you submitted. There's a variety of benefits to doing these diagrams. A huge one, I would say, is communication. When I think about complexity of specimens, something like a partial vulvectomy, for example, you might have this really complex specimen shape that doesn't have a ton of anatomic landmarks histologically that can be appreciated, right? Because skin will look like skin and mucosa will look like mucosa under the scope. But maybe your surgeon has designated all of these different, you know, landmarks and margins. So having a mapping diagram to kind of demonstrate where these were in relation to one another would be very helpful, because once you've cut something, it can be difficult to appreciate what it looked like once when it was intact. Another great time to use these mapping diagrams would be if you're changing the way in which you generally approach a specimen. A common one that I can think of is Whipple's. So you know, there's two main ways in which you can approach grossing a Whipple. You can cut down your ducts and essentially bisect your pancreas and go from there. Or you can do axial sectioning, which is becoming more and more common because there was actually a paper that came out in 2022 basically demonstrating that axial sectioning of the pancreas gets a more accurate size assessment and therefore a more accurate staging of the tumor. But if that's not a way that's commonly grossed at your hospital, your institution, that can be a very confusing way of sectioning if your pathologist isn't used to it. So having photos to kind of aid and demonstrate how you took the sections that you did really will help them appreciate where the sections are coming from when they're looking at it under the scope. So they're not as kind of lost or confused by it. So that's really helpful. And that's a time that I would definitely use it. And then also, you know, other situations like, I'm trying to think, salivary glands, for example. When we think about salivary gland tumors, they're not very common. But one of the things that's noted in the staging is extraparenchymal extension. And that will actually impact the stage, make it a higher stage. But it's important to note that that has to be extraparenchymal extension that's noted either macroscopically at the gross bench or clinically, not microscopically. So if I'm saying that I grossly see tumor extending beyond the gland itself into the surrounding soft tissue, supplementing that with a photo is really helpful because it really demonstrates I saw that, yes, and that will impact the stage and give it a higher stage for the patient. Versus if I don't say that I saw that and there's no picture to back it up, they can't call it extraparenchymal extension if it's only seen histologically. And if I was new, like let's say I'm a resident or a student and I'm not really comfortable grossing these cases, I might not know necessarily what that extraparenchymal extension looks like. But if I have a photo and the pathologist under the scope sees extraparenchymal extension, they could come back and say, hey, did you see anything grossly that looked like tumor extending beyond the gland? And you might say, you know, I'm not really sure, but let's look at the photo. And maybe in the picture, it's like, oh, there it is. I actually can see that. That is how they're going to, you know, utilize it for staging. So there's a ton of different ways in which these pictures can be utilized to kind of demonstrate what you have and what you've submitted. And it provides immense value to patient care.
Yeah, I can see that even like is where you need to assess signs of necrosis, say like bone tumors, kidney tumors, things like that, pictures would be helpful.
Oh my goodness, absolutely. Or even just like anatomy, you know, thinking about the assessing the integrity of the mesorectal envelope on a rectum, mm-hmm. You know, a photo obviously is going to really, really demonstrate that, show how it was received. That's a very clinically relevant feature that, yes, you can have sections that show disruption or completeness, but you're not going to submit your entire mesorectal envelope. You just, that's not necessary, and it's not something that's efficient, right, or, you know, good for patient care necessarily. But taking a picture can easily demonstrate, yes, it is complete and intact, or no, it is not. That's a hugely valuable resource that people, I think, are underutilizing is these pictures.
So it sounds like what you're saying then, in the, you know, going forward, basically take more pictures.
Yeah. Especially actually if you are teaching, because one thing that I think people forget is that if you have photos, that's a huge resource that you can use again and again and again, right? If you take pictures of, you know, a specimen that you commonly get at your institution, anytime you have a student or a resident that's learning how to gross that case, not only do they have the case right in front of them to learn from, but if you have photos of a previous case and they're good quality photos, that is a huge learning tool. It is a great resource for them to appreciate how sections are taken or why they're taken, showing certain anatomy or relationships. I mean, that's very important. I remember I one time had a Whipple that had a duodenal adenocarcinoma. The pancreas actually was entirely free of tumor. It just happened to be the location of this tumor. They had to do a Whipple to resect it. And I took so many pictures of that pancreas. And you might be thinking, well, you know, why? it wasn't really relevant for that case, but having photos of normal anatomy, what the pancreas should look like, where the pancreatic duct and the common bile duct should be running when there's no tumor present, was such a valuable thing to have. I still use those pictures to this day, and I think I grossed that case maybe 8 years ago. Because now when I'm saying, okay, you know, this is what this normally looks like, what are you seeing in your case? It's a good comparison tool. They can say, oh, I see, like the duct is obliterated by this tumor, you know, and that's something they might not have been able to appreciate without having some normal as a reference point. So, you know, there's tons of different ways in which pictures can be utilized. And yes, that can, you know, take up a couple extra minutes of your day. But again, in the long run, to have that as a resource, it's just invaluable. I mean, it's something that you really can use again and again and again. So it's worth taking those extra couple of seconds to snap a photo.
You know, that's a really great point. I hadn't thought about that before, taking pictures of things that are normal just to learn or help teach the anatomy of it. It's usually just, you know, a crazy looking tumor and someone took a picture of it. But I like that. I'm going to start doing that.
Yeah. To me, like, you know, I noticed that sometimes when people are first grossing, they really struggle with describing things, right? And a big part of that lack of confidence in description is a lack of understanding what is normal and what is not. So anytime I have something that's normal, I take a picture of it because that really helps new learners appreciate, okay, this is what we should be seeing. This is what we have in front of us. So they become more comfortable calling something or describing something in front of them because they actually can appreciate, okay, this is not a normal finding. This is what's significant versus, you know, I don't really know what I'm looking at here because I've never seen anything normal or abnormal. So yeah, I have a whole bunch of photos of things that are unremarkable, which might sound silly, but when you're teaching someone, it's really, really beneficial, especially if when you're teaching someone something and you cut into it and you think, oh, well, I'm sure I'll have some normal to show in this specimen. And then you cut into it and the tumor is replacing all of the parenchyma. You know, then it's really hard for the learner to appreciate actually all of this is tumor, right? Because they've never seen normal. I had a testicle like that recently that all of the testicular parenchyma was replaced by this really aggressive lesion. And the student that was grossing the case was a little confused. She couldn't really appreciate, you know, what she was looking at because she didn't know what normal should look like. And I showed her a picture of what normal parenchyma was. And she's like, oh, so all of this is tumor. I said, exactly. You know, it really helped connect some dots for her.
I like that. I like that a lot. Everything we've been talking about, it boils down to something a while ago, which is communication. We're communicating what the specimen is, what it looks like, what sections we've taken, how we sectioned to get those sections. And when it comes to communication, one of the best ways, or one of the major ways, I guess, we as PAs do that is through the gross description. And what I've noticed in my time working with residents that learning how to properly describe something is difficult, and it can be a bit of a weakness sometimes. Even if you understand how to gross a specimen, it's the matter of describing it that is the problem. Do you have suggestions for how to make that better?
I do. So my number one suggestion is going to be it's going to sound kind of strange, but it goes in conjunction with these photos of normal. My number one tip would actually be for residents to do as many autopsies as they possibly can, because in autopsy, that's where they're going to see the most normal looking, you know, tissue. And if they can appreciate what normal is, what normal should be described as, then when they see something that's abnormal, it's easier for them to focus in on the gross descriptors in that time. I personally always notice that people have a hard time because they're trying to describe normal and abnormal, right? If they're looking at something that's pathologic and normal and they don't know how to describe either, then they really can get lost in a specimen. But if they feel confident with part of that, then they can more efficiently and effectively develop their skill set when it comes to describing something that's abnormal. And I would also say repetition is important. You know, I mentioned earlier that sometimes people fear being in the gross room, But I'm a big believer that you can't learn if you're not uncomfortable. That uncomfortability is part of learning. So it's better to be in the grocery room as much as you can, grossing as much as you can, rather than saying, oh, I've done one or two of those, so I feel I'm done. I don't need to do any more. Because the more you do, the better you're going to feel about those cases, the more confident you're going to be, the stronger your dictations will be, because you'll have that repetition and you'll see different varieties or be able to use the same types of terminology again and again. I think that is really helpful too. So being in the grocery room, being comfortable with being uncomfortable as a learner, and really just trying your best. And another thing, avoid the word unremarkable. I think that, you know, until you really know what unremarkable means, if you force yourself to use gross descriptors, you're challenging yourself to really learn and apply them appropriately. So I think using the phrase unremarkable is something that should be avoided when you're learning.
Okay. So instead of saying unremarkable, you actually describe what it looks like, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Because again, if you can describe normal, you know, that's really helpful. You know, for example, instead of just saying like the ovarian parenchyma the uninvolved ovarian parenchyma is unremarkable, well, describe what you have. Do you see corpus luteum? Do you see corpus albicans? Is the parenchyma kind of pink tan in color? Is it soft? What do you see? And that also will help build confidence in whoever is grossing that case. Because you can say to them, yeah, great job. That is exactly what you're looking at. That's a really great way to describe it. So it will give them the confidence to try to describe the abnormal and, again, help things stick, I think, better if they know what normal actually is.
That's great advice. And I'm going to start utilizing that as well. Marissa, is there anything, did we miss anything that you wanted to talk about?
I don't think so. I just, you know, I want to say, again, thank you for having me. I think it's really important, you know, we are so involved with education, and it's important to really kind of do a self-assessment on how you're doing that and how you can be the best teacher for those around you, whether it's residents, students, colleagues, whatever that may be. And I think having self-reflection and thinking about why you're doing what you're doing and keeping your patient in mind, you know, understanding prognostic factors and the impact that your work has on patient care really goes a long way. It makes you a better teacher and makes everyone who's involved in that patient's care stronger and better. You just really want to give the best patient care you possibly can. And if everyone's on the same page and understands the value that they're of the work they're providing, I think that really goes a long way.
Yep, I agree. This has been fascinating. I've actually learned a lot from you today. I hope everyone else has too.
Oh, I hope so. I hope that this, you know, has meaning for some, and, you know, whether they walk away thinking about staging in a new way or about specimen photos in a new way, I hope it has brought to light the value of both of those things.
Yeah. Marissa Spencer, thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a good day.
If you're looking for another episode of the People of Pathology podcast to check out after this one, here's a clip from the first time Marissa was on the podcast.
I realized I was kind of getting tunnel vision, and that was me. It wasn't on the student or the resident or whoever it was I was teaching. I took responsibility for that, you know? Not that anyone should be blamed or finger pointing when there's a learner or there's a mistake that's made, but I think if you are not teaching someone to really understand what should be there and what's not and why you're sampling things the way you should, you potentially are compromising care. And the reality is, grossing is really important and special and kind of unique in the sense that if I don't get it at the bench, it's not going to make the scope. And the pathologist is not going to know that because they're trusting me to do what I need to do at the gross bench. So I definitely realized pretty quickly, like, I need to focus more on this why concept rather than how, because that's how mistakes are made. If someone's just kind of memorizing steps rather than actually being able to apply knowledge, critical thinking.
You can hear more from Marissa Spencer in episode 154. All right, big thanks to Marissa Spencer. I really enjoyed taking a deeper dive into this topic. If you're listening to this on release day, April 15th, well, officially Pathologist Assistant Day was yesterday, But this year, we're observing it on the 15th. So a happy PA Day to all my colleagues out there. Marissa emphasized the importance of teaching the reasoning behind the steps taken during grossing, rather than solely focusing on the step-by-step approach. She highlighted that memorizing steps, without understanding the rationale behind them, can lead to errors and compromises in specimen handling. Providing context and explaining the significance of each step in grossing helps learners grasp the underlying principles. By comprehending the purpose behind assessing margins, sectioning techniques, and specimen handling, the learner can approach each case with a deeper level of comprehension and confidence. Marissa also pointed out that teaching the why behind grossing procedures contributes to better retention of knowledge and promotes independent thinking among learners. By connecting the actions taken during grossing with staging, learners can adapt their approach to different cases and make informed decisions based on the specific requirements of each specimen. Additionally, Marissa highlighted the role of specimen photography and mapping diagrams in reinforcing the understanding of grossing procedures. By visually documenting normal and abnormal findings, learners can enhance their descriptive skills and develop a comprehensive understanding of specimen examination. This visual reinforcement serves as a valuable tool for reinforcing the why behind each step in grossing and aids in effective communication with pathologists and clinicians. So, if you have a role that involves teaching, whether formally or informally, it's a good idea to evaluate your teaching methods from time to time. That way you can determine what is working and what isn't. And once you know that, you can figure out how to do it better. Because just as pathology as a field evolves over time, our methods to teach it should evolve too. You can find links in the show notes to everything that we talked about today. Don't forget you can follow the show on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at People of Path, or just connect with me on LinkedIn. Thank you for continuing to share the show with others. Together, let's inspire the next generation of pathologists and laboratory professionals. This show is a member of Health Podcast Network, which connects listeners with conversations and stories about health, care, and well-being. You can find a link in the show notes to Health Podcast Network. And while you're there, check out some of their other interesting podcasts. Thanks for listening. I'm Dennis Strank, and I'll talk to you next time on the People of Pathology podcast.